Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
A warm welcome to our Care in Action podcast. I have again a very special guest, believe it or not. I'm excited to introduce Oscar Ekpomino. He's a Nigerian social entrepreneur and innovator. And one can say that he is revolutionizing the way we approach the topic of food security. Oscar is the creator of Chowberry, a groundbreaking tech platform that reduces food waste and helps feed underserved communities by connecting people with discounted food items nearing expiration. His work has earned international recognition, including being named one of Time Magazine's Next Generation Leaders. So, Oscar, welcome to Vienna. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Andrea.
If our appreciated listeners think that the sound is a bit different than normally, this has to do with the fact that we are today in the lounge of the Museum of Applied Arts. We will have a nice event tonight, and this is why we sound differently than normally. So, looking at your CV, Oscar, this is really impressive. So, when you were a boy, what did you want to become?
I always wanted to be like a doctor. When they asked me, a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. But as I grew older, I realized I was good with putting things together. I remember when I was like 9 years old. You know, in my country, there's power outage. So sometimes back in those days, there would be no power. So the place would be hot. So I would use beverage cans and cut them into fan blades. And then I would take the little rotor, the thing that rotates those old cassette tapes, and turn it into a spinning device that would spin the beverage can that I've cut into blades. And then I connect batteries into it, and then it was a fan for the house.
You were an inventor when you were a boy already.
Absolutely. I used to play around with a lot of stuff like that, tear the old radio apart. At least I was born in that generation where there was still cassette tapes, so yeah, it was fun tearing cassette tapes apart.
And you lived at that time also in Abuja?
No, I lived in a small coastal city called Calabar.
In Nigeria.
So Calabar is an old town, and it's where one of the places where the missionaries first came in Nigeria, in that region. And that's where I had my primary education, my secondary education, and then my university education as
well. I'm curious now, did you have a large family? Because I was one child only.
Oh, no, we were five.
Okay, and brothers and sisters.
Brothers and sisters, yes.
Okay. So you always had a lot of fun together, I see.
Yes, I did. I had a lot of fun together.
And who helped you start your career? Because being an innovator is something really impressive, honestly.
Yeah. So I think earlier on, I was curious. I had a curious mind. And I used to listen to the radio, listen to the TV, BBC. At that time, to the Deutsche Welle radio. I think the Germans had this radio,
Deutsche Welle,
that was broadcasting across Africa. So back then I knew about Bonn. I knew the headquarters was in Bonn, right? So I had a lot of insight into what Germany was like and what the world was like. So I used to read about innovators too back in the day. And then if you connect that to my curiosity, piecing little things together to make something innovative, I think that's what inspired me towards that direction. But then again, Chowberry itself comes from something very personal in my life as it relates to hunger and a difficult time growing up.
Did you ever experience that yourself, may I ask you?
Yeah, so this is something I am very open about. So growing up as a boy, there was a phase in the family where my dad, my parent, was unwell and couldn't work at the time. So it was mainly my mom who was looking out for us, and the family income was pretty low at the time. And we find that that period was a very challenging period for me. Access to food was a problem because, again, it was now a one-income family, female head of household, as we put it in.
With five children.
With five children.
And a sick husband.
And a sick husband.
That's
so,
a lot.
So that was a phase somewhere between 1997 into, let's say, 99, thereabout. And I always remembered that one of the things I always said was I would address the issue of hunger or walk in this space and just see how to create something to make sure other people don't face what I was going through at the time, the same experience.
When we met, of course, I knew it somehow, but I was really astonished that food waste, because food waste is such a big topic here in Europe and it's also in Austria. Yesterday we heard again that tons, half of the food we buy and produce goes to the waste. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Half of it.
Half of it.
So an enormous amount is not eaten in the end of the day. So when I read your CV and I did not learn a lot about childbearing, this is exaggerated to say, but that you have created this platform for food waste, of course I saw it because I had the privilege to go to many African countries, and of course I assumed that the food that is served is not reserved, but I didn't know actually that it is also such a big problem in large cities, in countries like Nigeria, because obviously it is, right?
Yes, it is. So in a country like Nigeria, most of the food that is lost happens, let's say, from the farm before it accesses the market, mainly because there's poor storage. The farmers don't have good ways to store the food or the produce. And then the cold chain is also poor. In other words, if it's a perishable item, like fruits and vegetables, how do you transport it over several kilometers to where the market is without it getting spoiled? But then there is also the retail and consumer end, where, again, because of logistics, when food is produced, it takes a while before it gets to the consumers themselves. So that long time lag, it sits and sits and sits, and then it begins to approach its expiration date or its end of shelf life. And that's where we thought, rather than people starving and having to go hungry, we would create this system that facilitates the redistribution of all of this food that would have otherwise gone to waste, working with families and people, working with non-profit organizations and individuals and entities that are working to provide food for people.
Are we talking now about processed food, or are we talking about agricultural products coming from the small old producers like egg, milk, meat, vegetables, or are we talking also about processed food, or both?
So both. So it's actually both. So you have food produce like the staples, we have Gary, we have Semovita, we have things like that. Then we also have produce like plantains, we have beans, we have rice and other food items. So it's a mix of both dry stock and also stock that
fresh stock
at the same time, yes.
And the producers are around the big cities, or are they more in far distance?
So they are in far distance, but the market, the large market, are concentrated in urban areas. So they transport it to where the market can access the farm produce. And then it's also redistributed across, let's say, food distributors, suppliers, retail chains, and all whatnot.
So the platform Childberry, what does Childberry mean? Is it a staple food in Nigeria, or what is it?
So I was looking for a name that would stick, and a name that hasn't been used anywhere in the world. So chow stands for to eat. It's a slang.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, chow. And then berry It's like, because we're dealing with things about to expire or approaching the end of shelf life, spoiling, about to spoil, we just start to use the berry to make it sweeter. Everybody wants a berry.
That's true.
So
that's
chow
very
berry.
Attractive fruit.
Yeah.
I love berries too.
Yeah, so chow berry.
So chow berry. This is a platform, and the platform does exactly what?
So we aggregate data on food that is approaching the end of shelf life from distributors, retailers and producers, and then we also have NGOs or people or organizations that are working to provide food to the hungry. Now, those food items, as they are approaching the end of shelf life, they are discounted.
Mm-hmm. That's the normal thing to do.
Yes, and yeah. as it gets closer, the discounts increases.
Mm-hmm.
But then we sit at the middle and create a win-win scenario for A, the food distributor to say, you're not going to waste this. You can recover a tiny fraction of your cost. But then to the NGO or to the people working in feeding programs, they can acquire a lot more food for a smaller amount of cost and resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then we created that ecosystem that, first of all, provides food for hungry people and also reduces food waste and also balances the supply chain in some way.
Mm-hmm. And it worked out, right?
And it worked out.
Which is really fascinating. Now, congrats to that, because it's not an easy thing.
Thank you.
And
thank
how you. Did you get all the retailers and distributors and shop owners to buy in? Why should they do that?
So it's I had to do a lot of convincing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that made them adopt it was the fact that they can recover their costs.
Okay.
So that's a good incentive.
So it's economically driven, the whole thing.
It's economically
driven. Which is a good thing.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. It is a good thing because then it is sustainable.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's a charitable thing.
Yes.
And if people don't want to be charitable any longer, then the system is breaking down. And your system is still working, is it?
Yes, it is. However, we are refining our model to aggregate a lot more producers and farmers. Mm-hmm. And do like a charity 2.0, which I can share more details about as we go along.
And is it working only? Abuja is a very large city, isn't it? Is it working only in Abuja or already in other places?
So it's in Abuja and Lagos.
And Lagos?
Yes.
Which are enormous big cities. How many inhabitants?
Lagos has 17 million.
Yeah, that's enormous. Wow.
Yes, and Abuja somewhere between, I would say, 6 and 9 million.
It appears small, but it is three times larger than the capital of Austria, of Vienna. So this is really a lot. And Chowberry is working there. And the next version, 2.0,
yes,
you want to spread it also to other
urban
areas.
Yes,
or to other countries.
To other parts of the country, actually, first. And then we can think about expanding it even further.
I told you yesterday that your company, the name of your company is the Gallery of Code, which I personally, I don't say that because I want to flatter you. I think that is a super creative name for a company where you really work on the intersection, is it right?
Yes.
Of digitalization, of society and art, right?
That's correct.
And you always want to put a social purpose in the focus of your projects.
That's correct.
Has it to do with your personal experience or where does it come from?
So growing up, especially after I finished university, I wanted to live a life of purpose. I wanted to do things that have meaning and I wanted to do things that create opportunity for others. And that has been my source of fulfillment, because I believe that's what makes me fulfill. So when we created Gallery of Code, what I had in mind was a place where young people can come and innovate and where solutions that betters the lives of other people can also come out of. Then, of course, it's combining arts, combining technology, combining scientific approaches, and this whole idea of multidisciplinary way of working. And we're excited that, you know, we've been able to create some of those solutions and also provided a stage or a platform for artists or other people to leverage the skill set, knowledge, expertise in technology that we have. Of course, learning from what we did with Childberry, of course, using technology as a solution, we're able to replicate that in and work with other people from different backgrounds.
So your multidisciplinary institute is tackling, I hope that I can say that like this,
yes,
is tackling the most pressing social topics of your own country and also continent, right?
That's absolutely right. So sectors or thematic areas, mm-hmm, include food, include education, mm-hmm, include maybe climate change in some way. Mm-hmm. So we are working at that intersection to provide solutions in health, in education, food, and other parts that are relevant within our society.
And it is all interconnected, isn't it?
Yes, it's connected, very connected. Education is connected to job creation, for example, and skills. So we've done a lot of programs around digital skills, mm-hmm, providing digital skills to young people, women and girls. We've created solutions that address issues in the agricultural sector. We've done research in art pieces, created artworks and art pieces that trigger and evoke questions or ask questions, mm-hmm, on how we can evolve to be better in our society or how it affects society.
And the people around you, because with your education, Oscar, you could also have a very good job, earn a lot of money, right? With your education, how is it perceived by your family, by your friends, the thing that you are doing? Is it something exotic or is it something that is highly accepted and maybe even admired? Because I think it's really remarkable, your engagement.
So I'll speak from the heart now.
Yeah, please.
When I first started, it was tough because the ideal scenario really is to get a job and start working and earning money. I did work for a bit, mm-hmm, but I wasn't fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And when I started this journey out, my family supported me enormously, but they weren't really sure about the path I was taking. And I just had to keep on going because I had the belief that this is what I would gain fulfillment from. But they didn't see it as exotic back then, people around me. But now people are like, oh, okay, we see what you saw 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. We see what you saw 10 years ago, especially when some of the ideas that I spoke about came to life, or we are partnering with some institute or some NGO, mm-hmm, and then they can see real results. Because back then it was mainly just ideas and potential. Mm-hmm. But then when potential materializes into something tangible that people can connect with and are able to utilize it as a platform for upliftment, mm-hmm, then people can say, hey, we believe you now and we see what you're doing.
Because I think in the end, the purpose of the Gallery of Code and purpose of a global international organization like CARE, of course the main purpose might differ a bit, but it's in the end it's all about collaboration. I would even say there could be some co-creation.
Yeah.
And it could help an organization like CARE to benefit also from your knowledge and your experience, because this is really coming from the people.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like the word co-creation, mm-hmm, because then it's people-led, mm-hmm, and it originates from the location and locality where the need is required the most.
What it ideally should be also in the mission and vision of a global player like CARE.
If you say so, I agree.
We will see what we can do together maybe in the future. And I think it would need many more young entrepreneurs mm-hmm. like you are, Oscar, mm-hmm. not only in Nigeria or on the African continent, because I really don't like to talk about Africa as such, because Africa as such is simply non-existing. There are many countries mm-hmm. and they are all very special and very different, like Europe as such is also non-existing. So also in Europe, I would say we would need many more innovators that put in the center of their work to solve social problems. Uh-huh. That's a really smart idea. And how, what would you tell young people who listen to us and think, ah, I would really love to become a social entrepreneur? Because uh-huh. nowadays it's also a buzzword.
Yes.
Isn't it? Because I always said an entrepreneur has to be an entrepreneur in the end. You have to make money, social or not. If you put the focus on a social issue, the better it is. But also companies can do that. You need not uh-huh. necessarily call yourself, I'm a social entrepreneur. You can, but you need not uh-huh. do it necessarily uh-huh. to reach something. What would you advise young people who listen to us and say, I also want to be a social entrepreneur? What uh-huh. would be your advice? Not for Nigeria, globally, because the uh-huh. world would need uh-huh. more social innovators, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are problems around us, and it requires a heart that cares. Your organization is called CARE, mm-hmm. for example. So it does take a heart that cares and is able to recognize problems. So what I would say to people or young people who want to go into or be entrepreneurs that solve social problems would be, number one, first of all, to develop empathy. Mm. So empathy is the first key element. Empathy for the sufferings of other people, empathy for the society and the problems that are around. Obviously, in my own context, the problems could be things like insecurity in Africa or access to quality healthcare or food. But those are not problems that are typical in, let's say, developed societies like here in Austria. It could be other issues, maybe job creation or mm-hmm. skilling the workforce up, or immigration mm-hmm. and things like that. But when you have empathy, you're able to begin to recognize the problem and think innovatively to solve those issues. So empathy is one. The next second element is the spirit of enterprise. The spirit of enterprise is that ability to literally create water or squeeze water out of rocks. So when I started, I had absolutely nothing. I didn't get any big grant or any big funding, or, you know, like the Silicon Valley theorists say, if you want to start a company, go to families and friends. My family and friend is my auntie. My auntie sold food by the side of the market, so where was she going to get those funds for that? So you must be able to bring in that spirit of enterprise and that innate ability to create something out of nothing. So that's the second point. And the third and final point is that you have to be resilient. So empathy, spirit of enterprise, and resilience. So resilience is the fact that no matter what comes your way, no matter the difficulty along the journey, how difficult it is, you just have to find a way to keep going because you've seen the end goal and the direction that you're taking, and nothing can absolutely stop you.
I hope that nothing will stop you in the future, and I hope that this is also true for CARE, the organization that I have been working for more than 15 years this autumn. And it is very remarkable to have this conversation with a tech entrepreneur who tells us that the main ingredient is empathy. Oscar, it was an honor that you are our guest. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate having me here.
Thanks for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For further information, go to care.at. Sponsored by CC Real.